What up, Whiskey Ginger fans? Happy New Year. I hope 2021 is off to a great start. Hope everyone is revving their engines in the right way. The Red Rockets about to get back out there on the road as soon as that vax is out to everybody. I want to see this country. So I hope this year starts off significantly better for you than 2020 did. My first ep of the year is with Sam Morrell. I love this dude. He has a special right now out on YouTube that he put out himself from the rooftop in New York. He's the best. I don't have any dates planned right now, but go to AndrewSantinoStore.com if you want to pick up some merch and support over here. And more support, go to the Patreon, patreon.com/WhiskeyGingerPodcast. That helps us with the people that put this together. I do Cheeto Chats, where I do a little bit of insight about what's going on in my life. We do Zooms with the top tier. There's discount codes and episodes without ads, yada, yada, and all sorts of fun stuff on the Patreon. Please support it. It helps support this whole thing and keep it growing and moving along. Enough rambling from your boy. Let's go to the episode.
In here, we pour whiskey.
You're that creature in the ginger beard.
Sturdy and ginger.
Like vampires, the ginger gene is a curse.
Gingers are beautiful.
You owe me $5 for the whiskey, $75 for the horse.
Gingers are hell no.
This whiskey is excellent.
Ginger. I like gingers.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Whiskey Ginger. My guest today is one of my favorite people on earth. I say that for all my guests, but I mean it once again today. It's Sam Morrell. Sam, what's up?
Thanks for having me, man.
Dude, thanks for coming on. This is your second time on the show. The first time we did it, we were in, just for laughs, Toronto or
Vancouver.
Montreal? Vancouver. And that's so, I didn't even, all those kind of blurred together, those just for laughs, because
yeah.
I was in and out so fast. But
I'm always in for like one day. I land, I do the show.
I know.
But it sucks because Vancouver, Toronto, pretty good cities, man.
Oh, they're great cities. I mean, every time I go, I have a really good time. It just, now the busier that, you know, you get when you're touring,
yeah.
You can't spend a lot of time there. That's why those moments, I always say that to young comics, those moments that you get to do JFL or New Faces or whatever, and people are like, what, they don't care about it. It's like, dude, cherish it because you're there for 4 days.
Yeah.
You should have the most fun. I mean, when I did New Faces, me and...
Were we New Faces the same year?
I think I was 2000 and... I don't even know, dude.
I feel like we were. Maybe we weren't.
What year were you?
I think 2013.
Yeah, 13 sounds right to me, yeah. Because... I think 13. 13 sounds right.
Norman,
yeah, it was like
it was Norman, Ian Carmel.
Carmel, know. Right. Yeah. Brooks Wheeling.
Yes, that was it for sure. Yeah.
Well, we also shot our half hours the same year.
Yeah.
But
that's the first time we really chat, I feel like.
Right. Yeah. When we were in Boston. That was a great crew too. That was like a huge was me, you, Brooks again.
Joe List.
It was great. Well, that was funny because that kind of your New York class and our LA class have kind of had the same, comedy growth as far as those things go.
Yeah.
And then you guys, not to make a cheap transition, but you guys have taken it upon yourself to now start your own specials and put them out. And Sam's got a new special out right now called Up on the Roof. And it's up on YouTube right now. It's your YouTube page? It's yours,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I just did it this time on my... I did Comedy Central's right. YouTube the last time, but it's just, time to bite the bullet.
Right, look, the other one did great. It got millions of views. I mean, what was it? The first one got how many?
Almost 5 million. It's like 4.6 or 7 right now.
That's crazy. Can you imagine? I mean, that's, if only everybody paid a couple bucks for that, right?
I know. So my mom says that shit to me all the time. She's like, imagine if people paid. I'm like, I do. It's crossed my mind.
Every day. Every day. Well, that's what sucks is like people don't know. Look, I think the new musicians learned this years ago. It was like, well, you got to give it to them because they need it for free and you need to find a way to monetize afterwards. Because for us, it's about butts in the seats on tour.
Right.
Same thing with musicians, but we just, we thought we could get away with it for years. And it just, you learn it doesn't work. It's like, they just got to give it to them, man. You just got to put it out there.
Yeah, man. And I very wisely put out a special in February because I was like, I'll tour off this. And then,
Yeah, what happened, dude? Yeah, nothing.
But so I was just like, fuck it. I'm going to put out another one on roofs because I was doing roofs every... I was literally doing roofs every night. And I thought, you know what? This looks kind of cool. It started because I was doing... I did a show in a backyard in Brooklyn. And I get there and like, it's like this pandemic shows are like just a joke, man. So I show up And the guy messaged me. He's like, oh, it was supposed to be on a roof, but they threw a party. So we're now in a backyard. So it's like a turf war. It's turf war for space now outdoors. So right. we lost to some young kids who had a party. So now we're in some woman's backyard who is pissed drunk and heckling every comic. She won't let me use her bathroom. So I had to go up to that roof and find a corner and piss before I went on stage. And then I go on, and I just see her. It's her place, so she's just heckling every comic. She's a drunk,
yeah.
And then finally, she had to negotiate the terms of going on and doing a set. I'm like, I just spent $40 on a cab. Could I just go up? And she's like, all right, fine. So I went up, and it's not going well. They're not a hot crowd. It's a backyard. Right. They're all kind of they've been there for a while. She just heckles me nonstop, and I just start fucking hammering her to the point that I was mad I didn't have it on recording. And I'm hammering her so hard, and it's going so I'm like, fuck, this is a perfect this is a perfect moment. I'm so glad. Someone must be capturing this. No one records it until she comes on stage and grabs the mic from me.
I saw it.
Yeah. And she just grabs and goes, get the fuck out of here. And that's when I realized I needed to record these sets. So then it just turned into a whole adventure and recording roofs and shit.
Well, that clip you put up on your Instagram, right?
So that or Twitter,
I saw it somewhere. Yeah, I saw it somewhere. I thought that was hilarious. But that's the sentiment of why I didn't do a lot of shows. I've only done 4 to date.
Yeah.
Here in LA. I'm about to do a few more. But out here, it was the city was shutting down shows. And then I did one of the car shows, the parking lot car shows. Yes. Out.
Oh, I'm familiar. And, yeah.
I did it.
Matt Rife show?
No, it was, God, I can't remember. It was at the Magic Castle. I don't know what's wrong with me. But anyway, she put on a good show. They did a great job. But I don't want to be performing to people in cars. It just was not.
It's humiliating.
It's really, genuinely, and I say that up top, we all make a joke hey, in March, I sold out 6 shows in Philly, and it's great to be here in front of a Honda Civic. It's we joke about it, but the truth is it makes you feel like shit. You're like, this is embarrassing. This isn't what I want to do. There is no connection.
I'm okay with outdoors when I can see faces and hear laughs.
Yes.
When I'm looking at tinted windows and hearing honks, I'm like, I'm good. It's taken us back to how we started when it was all hell gigs, when it was I was talking to Bert Kreischer about this where I said, man, do you remember doing ambush shows where you're just a lot of people don't know comics would do shows where we get on stage and it'd be 8 people eating dinner in a restaurant. You ready for comedy? And they'd be no. And then we just bomb. It was humiliating, but it's kind of because I did one of those shows. I remember I left Tulane University and I told these frat kids, I was like, I'm leaving school. I'm going to be a comedian. And they were, and then I did an ambush show and the only 4 people in the crowd were those frat kids who were good luck, you fucking psycho. And I just had to bomb for those 4 kids. And it's that level of humiliation. It's it never totally leaves you. You always remember it.
And
weirdly, those skills, they've kind of come in handy.
Totally. Well, dude, when I was doing these shows, when I did the first couple of shows, Segura and I did the first show together. We hadn't done an outdoor show, and we both did our first show together. It was me, Segura, Burr.
Wow. Oh, my gosh.
I know. Erica Rhodes, Ian Edwards, and... oh, shit. Another. But anyway... I mean, I know a lineup in a guy's backyard in Silver Lake, some hilarious. Random, and I remember talking to Segura before we went on, and Tom was like, are you nervous?" I was like, "Dude, yeah, isn't that fucking? I haven't been nervous in years, but I hadn't been on stage in 7-8 months, and I just was so freaked out by it. And then the moment I got back on stage, that exact same feeling of excitement, anxiety, this bubbling." Pulsating moment, and then right as I told the first joke, I felt like the old days again. It was but I liked the feeling. It was the first time I got high. You remember the first time you got high? You're like, how could I duplicate this high over and over? And then the more you do it, the more you lose that thing. And so it felt good to feel nervous again. And I try, 2 weeks ago I did a backyard show and I did all new stuff and it was so hard to get through But I'm glad that it's like that's happening again. Because usually, you know, at the store, I get to work out half new stuff, half old stuff, and keep blending and blending. But with this, I was like, I might as well just go do all new shit. Because so much of my old stuff you don't like anymore. It's like, I don't want to do that. It's been months and it's not relevant. And there's nothing, there's no you know, weight to it anymore. So, oh, I was going to ask you, when you said those ambush shows, did you ever do Captain Brian's show in Marco Island off the hook?
Oh, dude, it's like the closer of my last special is Naples. It's like fucking Naples.
Oh, that's right, that's right,
so
that's
like,
right.
Yeah, yeah, it's
that's
a big, right, I get so many messages about Naples and... But it's I didn't do Marco Island. I did the Naples one, but I did the Marco. I heard that one's even worse. I mean, that was a hell gig.
Dude, the stage was next to a frozen shellfish buffet. So right to your right, I'm not kidding, is like humps of shrimp and crab.
We can't compete with crab. Who doesn't fucking like? No, there's not a person who doesn't like crab more than comedy. It's better than anything we're gonna say.
Right, snow crab or this shitty redheaded guy's jokes. At six thirty, I think the first show was 6 or 6:30.
Brutal.
And then his thing was he had to do it early because the second show couldn't go after a certain time because of Marco Island. Island law. And
hell gig.
Oh, dude, it was so rough.
That was one of the worst weekends. I remember I was complaining so much on Twitter about that club because I was just like getting drunk in the back, just being like, fuck this weekend. And to the point that my agent texted me like, you might want to dial it down before the check clears. And I was like, no, it's more important to me. Like, I need this as a human right now to complain.
The only really fun thing about it, and I don't dislike that owner or anything. I don't like that he makes you call you captain.
I don't like that.
Oh, I know. He didn't. I barely saw
Chris
him.
Chris DeStefano would not do it. He was like, I'm not calling you captain.
No, I'm not going to call a man captain. Yeah. I don't remember that, but I think.
No, he was nice enough. He was a nice enough guy.
The only great thing about that club, or the thing I remember, is there was an Irish pub in the parking lot of the Marco Island, and I became friends with the owner. His son was this young guy who came to the show, and I still talk to them today.
Wow.
And he was great because every night to go drown my sorrows, because I was by myself, I didn't have a feature. This is when I first was starting the road. I would go to that bar and get shit-faced with him, and that helped a ton, because otherwise I would have jumped off that balcony that they put me on in the 15th story. For sure, I would have died at the beach. I was miserable, dude. I would eat shit for 40
it's
minutes.
It's weird because they think they're doing you a favor, but it's like, no, it's like, like, look, accommodations are important, but at a certain point, like, if you're just eating shit on stage and then hanging on a beach, like, you're thinking about walking into the river or into the fucking ocean like the writer in The Long Goodbye. You're like, why don't I just give myself to the sea? It's depressing, man. So, like, obviously, you want a good hotel, but if it's just one of those gigs that you're like, this is a 4-star hotel, the crowd's going to hate you. It's not. It's miserable.
Yeah, it's miserable.
I did a gig like that in Bermuda where it was like, there was a nice-ass hotel, and then there was a guy coming backstage who was like a fucking psycho and like aggressive as hell with Ida Rodriguez. And I was like, dude, we got to get security or something. It's not worth it at a certain point.
Right. Well, no. Well, they think it's like, they're always doing you a favor. Rodriguez, I love Ada. We went to, this is great, dude. I had never done Cabo San Lucas. Cabo has a comedy festival. Dude, I had never done it. They had asked me a few times. And then finally,
it's a bad show if they're serving drinks with umbrellas in it. That's how you know it's a bad show.
I told my lady, I said, do you want to go to Cabo for free? Like, let's just go. So we make a vacation out of it. I said, let's just go to Cabo for free.
Yeah.
They said they'll fly you down. We'll just go have fun.
Yeah.
And it was so disorganized. And Aiden knows this. I said, they hadn't given me a schedule of shows. And we arrived a day after I was supposed to. So when I got there, they had like a meet and greet and all this stuff and all these comics. Not to sound like this guy, but they were a little surprised I was doing it. They were like, what are you doing here? And I was like, it's a vacation. And then they didn't give me a schedule. So Sam, For 4 days, I didn't perform once. I got a free trip, and I went back home.
That's kind of nice.
It was awesome. I'm sure they were livid about it, but I showed up to one of the venues, and there was no one there.
Yeah.
And the poor girl that was like organizing it, she was like, "Are you wanting to go on?" And I was like, "Nah, I'm good. I'm good."
That's on them, imagine? Dude. That's on them. If no one I know, got in it contact, was. I mean, that's insane. Cabo San Lucas. Anytime it's in like a vacation spot, though, you know it's like, if there's a Senor Frogs nearby, don't do a comedy festival. What are you thinking?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, if your late show is in Margaritaville and Jimmy Buffett's Margaritaville, just bail. I bailed. I was like, I'm sorry. I'm not doing this. I'm just going to go sit with my lady at the beach. It turned out to be okay, but I felt kind of bad because I was like, these people paid me to come down here. I should have done comedy, but everywhere I went, the show wasn't happening. Or if it was, it didn't start for like 2 hours after it was supposed to start. I mean, those festivals, until they can get them right,
yeah,
it's so hard to organize. I mean, look, JFL is still a nightmare, and they've been doing it for like 50 years or what. I mean, I don't even know.
I know.
It's still disorganized.
I landed,
you know?
And I'm just like, I landed. I remember I couldn't get into my hotel, and I'm like, you guys got one fucking job here. Just get me in a hotel. I've been up all night, yeah, you know?
I know.
It's amazing. Know. And it's like we're all at a like comedy shape right now, which is so sad. I mean, it is kind of like, why would I? That's why I put out a special, because I was like, what am I going to relearn these jokes in like 6 months and then do a special? I was just like, I'm done with this shit. There gets to a certain point where you're like, I'm done with these jokes. Let me move on and let me just like learn a new hour, as painful as that is as well.
No, but it's helpful. I mean, it's worth it because it's going to help you get stronger during a time when I feel like a lot of people are getting not weaker, but getting stagnant. It's going to take a lot of time for people to like rev the engines back up, but you're already around the corner, which I think was smart about it. And it looked good, man. I was kind of jealous of the New York scene. Got to this rooftop thing was so cool.
Yeah.
Out here, I did one rooftop show downtown and it was great, but everywhere else you go is in some guy's backyard. And I feel guilty because I'm like, these neighbors don't want to fucking hear me.
Oh, yeah.
And the houses are right there. I mean, in LA, you know, everything's on top of each other like New York. So imagine we're in some guy's backyard. All of these neighbors are looking out. I mean, I did a show. There was an old folks home in the backyard and they were throwing shit. I'm not kidding. They were throwing shit down at the performers. Old people, bro. Old people. That's we're pissing off the geriatric generation.
You're getting pelted with Werther's Originals while you're trying to tell
jokes. Yeah, yeah. Just teeth, throwing their own teeth. It was terrible, dude. It was just a reminder of like
of Marco Island.
Marco of Off the Hook. Yeah, comedy belongs inside.
I mean, that's the worst part is when you're bombing outdoors, you're like, oh, I just told 30 minutes worth of jokes in like seven. It's crazy because those laughs are just like, even when you're doing okay indoors, you can kind of do your rhythm. When you're outdoors,
sure,
you're just like, what am I fucking doing? So. I mean, the New York scene, it was funny when I was in LA for like a while, there were so few shows, and then you get back to New York and they're like, it's on 49th Street. And I'm like, where? They're like, on the street. And I'm like, all right. So we'd literally be doing shows like we're beggars. We're like, it's so humiliating, but also you get a couple laughs, you get a couple new jokes. You're like, I guess it was worth it. You know?
Yeah. I mean, it is. I mean, I was supposed to tour with Chrissy D and do a couple shows on the East Coast, and I had to cancel because I got COVID, and I zoomed in.
Fuck, are you okay? How was that?
It was fine. I mean, I'm fine is what I meant. It was, you know, it was shitty, but I'm fine. I'm fine. I've talked about it ad nauseum, so at this point, I'm just kind of like, it's in my rear view, but it sucks. It was shitty. I hope no one gets it. I know a lot of people in New York. I know there's getting spread around right now to the comedy community. Yeah. It's pretty crazy, dude. Apparently, everybody has sex with Akash Singh.
I was supposed to do Chris and Giannis's podcast, and they were like, they have to do it in person. And I was like, all right, they're being careful. And they're like, oh, they're being very careful. And then like a week later, I'm texting Giannis like, you all right, buddy?
Yeah, dude, I know that. It's just crazy how it sweeps and how it works and like, you know, how you get it or when you get it. It's a whole thing. And I think it sucked. I'm glad I'm through it. It's not fun. I hope no one gets it. That's what I say. Because, like, I don't know what's going to happen. Some people end up in the hospital. Some people don't. I did it.
I mean, Michael Yo taking 6 months to like feel good again, and Chris Christie like doing jumping jacks out of the hospital. You're like, how the fuck did that happen? I mean, same with even Trump. You're like, I mean, how the hell? He's not in shape, you know? And it took Melania longer to
if
you're looking at body types, you're thinking she's going to get out of there with more ease than he is.
For sure. For sure. Well, but you don't know, dude. Those Russians, she's a strange bird, dude. She's been eating cotton for years. You never know what her diet is. But I had to cancel these shows, and so I just zoomed into the shows. But this was my favorite thing to do to Chris because, you know, he was telling me afterwards at the first show, I was like, how was it? You know, because I couldn't tell via the Zoom. And he's like, it was fun, but the reception was hard. It was so far away. It's outside in these fields, you know, like Bargatze's doing all these drive-in shows.
I saw that.
But they let me Zoom in. And the best part was I could say whatever I want. And Chris had to deal with it because he was on stage. So I did a bunch of, you know, there was a security guard down next to Chris, this big black dude. And I was like, Chris, tell your N-word joke. Do all those N-word jokes that you like so much. And he was like, that's not real. That's not true. I'm like, dude, do it. Do that. Did you do your Nazi set? Did you do any of that, the salute? So I would just do a bunch of like anti-Semitic racist stuff, and I would let him have to deal with it. And then I just clicked out of the Zoom. It was great to just be like, all right, man, take it easy.
So he just like, he just held your, like the phone up.
No, dude, they had the computer set up where I was broadcast on one of the on the screens.
Jeez.
Yeah, it was wild. And then but he had to stand on stage while I was being racist. It was so wonderful, man. It's nothing more fun than setting your buddy up. It was like he loved it. You know, Chris loves that stuff. He walks right into that fire. But but that was only one thing about doing the Zoom through COVID was I was able to just hang him out to dry. But I am mad. It screwed up doing shows. I missed a vacation. You know, it put me out for a couple of weeks. And, you know, it was so stupid and simple. And I wish in retrospect I didn't get it. I just hope I don't feel anything in the future. That's all.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like, is COVID like acid? Is it going to hit you back in like 3 or 4 years? Like, fuck. That's the scary thing is just not knowing. But what a shitty virus this is, you know? Like,
well, yeah, it's also like I've started to look at it a different. I've gained some perspective in the idea that like you don't know what anything's going to be in 3 or 4 years.
That's
so
true.
This sucks. It sucks. I'm through it. But like, you know, I had a family member pass away a couple of days ago, and it's all good. But I think like you know. You never know when that shit's gonna.
Was your family member Darth Vader? Is that who it was?
Yes, it was. Yeah, it was. Yeah, sorry, man. Sorry. I hate to. I know that hurts your feelings, but no. It was. You know, it was like one of those moments where you just gain perspective again. You're like, nothing's guaranteed, dude. And he didn't pass from COVID or anything. It was just, dude, life.
Yeah.
Life is fucked. Shit. Fucked up. Shit happens.
You're so right.
To sound like a cornball, you know, it's like you have to just enjoy it and. Who gives a fuck? Because it's over at some point. Whether you see it coming or not.
Oh, dude, if I saw like just like a year ago that I was doing a rooftop special, I'd be like, what the fuck happened to the world? I mean, like we could be performing in like Mad Max in 3 years. Like we don't know what's gonna be happening. I mean, you're right. You don't know what's gonna happen. You gotta. This has really taught me to be present and a little more grateful for the good things. I mean, sometimes you don't realize how good your life was. You're like, shit, I didn't realize I peaked playing strip malls, but apparently that was those were the good days, you know?
Yeah. Honestly, the simple getting on a plane, going to a new city, having a good time.
Totally. The routine. I was watching Bourdain's show the other day, just like a rerun, and obviously a fucking rerun. I don't even know why I said that, but like, that watching those shows, I remember watching him and being like, I got to make the most of every city. I used to just stay in my hotel sometimes. And then I realized like, why am I not trying to find a cool food spot or like find something cool in the city? And I got a little bit better about that. So now I actually really miss like that routine of getting on a flight, trying
Me
to
too.
Write jokes, trying to come up with some new shit, experiencing the city, experiencing the people. And now we're where we are and we're not going to ever take it for granted again, I hope.
Right. Well, dude, I mean, I miss a lot. I've talked a lot about that on the show because my dad traveled for years for work and he never really did anything in these cities. And I was like, I made it a point. You know, I'm a baseball fan. I go to a game in every city.
I love that. I love that you do that.
So it's like I learned early on that I was like, I'm either going to be bored and depressed, or I'll be depressed, but I'll be walking around the city. You know what I mean? Like when I was,
top
when
shelf
I was eating
depression. Around well, people yeah. depression.
Champagne depression. Yeah, you know what I mean? Like you might as well be out in public. If the weekend isn't good and you're new on the road and it's so hard anyway, it's like, might as well just go enjoy how shitty the experience is. Like really suck it. I try to suck it up and just do
absolutely.
It. Even if I was having a terrible time. And if you're alone, it was hard when you're solo on the road, man. Good God.
Oh, it's I mean, my friend Carmen Lynch has a great joke about they say money won't buy you happiness. And she goes, you know, I cried in a Mercedes once. It wasn't that bad.
she's funny,
she's so
dude.
Good.
She's very funny.
But I mean, dude, it's true. Like you're on the road and you're alone. It can be tough. But then also yeah. there is some like there is a peace to it, like that you can just go anywhere. Like sometimes I bring someone, sometimes I don't. But I love experiencing a new city, man, or just like going to an old city and having a routine. There's something comforting about that. You're like, oh,
yes,
I'm going to go to this restaurant again, or I'm going to link up with this person again. I mean, there is something.
You ever been to Indianapolis? Do you ever go to St. Elmo's? Do you know what that is?
I don't.
This is like inside baseball comic talk. It's just that there's like a steakhouse around the corner from the club and whoa. St. Elmo's. It's like really famous, old indie. So good, man. Anyway,
damn, I gotta,
whatever.
Yeah,
that's
like
you got to go to St. Elmo's.
Do they reference
yeah.
that in like Parks and Rec or something? Is that like a? I feel like they
maybe
dude. That
sounds familiar.
That's
huh?
like yeah. I've done every club in Indianapolis. I think Morty's, Crackers, Helium, the Comedy yep. Attic. Yep. I think I've done every club in Indianapolis possible.
How can a city that's not that big have that much comedy? Isn't that crazy?
Too much comedy. Yeah, I
yeah, it's way too much.
I remember, fuck man, Crackers. I remember I had a guy, I was there New Year's, and I was just getting buried by a comic all fucking weekend. This guy, he would do okay his whole set, but his closer would just fucking bury me. The bit was basically like, he would say, so I went to a Backstreet Boys concert recently, and I noticed they serenade a woman on stage with a rose and a dance. So I thought, how funny would that be if I did it to a guy? And he'd bring a guy on stage and he'd do the dance and it would fucking blow the roof off.
Of course.
To the point.
Of course.
And by the way, the joke is, how funny is being gay? Look at this shit.
Yeah.
That's the entire joke. But in Indianapolis, turns out I can't fucking follow that. And like night one or two, I'd be like, oh, well, yeah, look, I guess, you know, I guess it's a good bit. And then like night three or four, I'd be like, yeah, some of us write jokes, you fucking asshole.
You hack.
So like night two or three, we were good. Night three, he was like, fuck this guy.
The last show, you're like, hey, man, can you take me on stage and dance with me? Because I need a transition. At least bring me into your fucking closer. Oh, dude, but those experiences and that stuff on the road is what like, I think helps you just learn the road for when you do it on, you get more independent as you go along. It just all that shit helps. It just helps shape you, honestly. Yeah. And it's good fucking material. When you were living out here, how long were you out here for?
You stayed out here
for how long? What was the impetus to move back to go back to New York? You just wanted out of LA.
Yeah, I was staying with Taylor, and I think she said, "You're going crazy here. You're a New Yorker. I'm sick of hearing you complain. Go home for a while." And she was right. I needed to. I think it's like,
yeah,
you know, it was good for me to come home for a bit. I'm still here. I'll come back out there, you know, maybe later in the month or something. But
right,
you know, it was much needed, and you know, I think the pace of New York, I can't drive. So that's hard for me in Los Angeles. I'm such a city kid. I'm fucking worthless. She's also telling me like, well, maybe you'll learn. And I'm like, well, you have friends who know how to drive, who get in car crashes because of all the shitty drivers in LA. Like, how much do you believe in me that I'm going to just like put it together? Like, I think I'm just fucked. I think I'm just one of those dudes who can't drive. I'm too old.
There's a couple of dudes. I've heard a couple of guys. There was for a long time, Jordan Peele.
Yeah.
I had heard that he didn't have a license for like a decade or something, like even longer, that he lived in LA because he didn't want to do it. He just was like, I'm not getting a license. I don't want one out here. I'm not from here. Yeah. And he did it for a long time. I mean, granted, he's been here now forever, but this was back in the day. He just didn't want to do it because he was like, it's a ripoff anyway. Living here is a ripoff. Cars cars are expensive. Like, all of that stuff is like, it's almost more worth it to just, back then, take a cab, now take an Uber. But, I mean, you know, I get it. I get it when people move here from cities that are like, I don't want
to. Would you ever move back to Chicago or move somewhere else? Or are you staying out there for good?
I've talked on the podcast about, I love Denver.
Yeah, it's a great city.
Yeah, I was just there, and I looked at some neighborhoods for fun. I don't know, man. I'm certainly not going to follow the Joe Rogan train to Austin. That's not my scene. I'm not going to blindly just go there because he's there. A lot of people are doing it, and I think it's whatever. It's your choice. But I don't have any stake in Texas, so it's like,
yeah,
you know, I've stake in other places. That, in fact, we were talking about this. I was talking about this to my wife's family, but like, she was like, "What cities that have you visited on the road that you love?" And I was like, that's interesting, because there were cities that along the way I've gone, dude, I would live here.
Yeah.
You know, like I would, like I genuinely, I think, I love Vancouver.
It's beautiful.
The weather is a little too shitty for me, but I love Vancouver.
The
I think
air
it's such
in
a gorgeous
Vancouver
city.
is weirdly like, you like, especially coming from New York, I'm just like, oh my God, what is that? Not rat piss and garbage? Right. That's crazy.
That's
the hard thing when Taylor visits New York, is I want to like sell her on New York. I want to be like, look how cool New York is. And then New York is like a shitty roommate who like doesn't behave when she like every time I'm like, how great is this? Like a rat will run out of nowhere. She'll see a dick on the train. It sucks. So I'm really like, I'm just like, come on, behave, New York. But yeah, Vancouver and Toronto and Montreal are like three great Canadian cities.
So good. I love them. I mean, I loved Nashville when I went there.
I've never been to Nashville. I was booked for the first time at Zanies this year, and I couldn't make it, but because
you got to go, dude. It's such a great city.
You would go to Nashville?
It's great. I don't know if I'd move there, but it's one of those spots where when I went, I had such a good time. You know, it feels like Atlanta. Like, I loved Atlanta.
Atlanta's so
fun. There's so much culture. There's so much there's so much life down there. But I don't know, man. It's hard to pick yourself up and go to a place where comedy isn't part of the social zeitgeist. You know what I mean? Like New York and LA and Chicago, it's like embedded in the culture. And you go to those other places,
point.
I think it's just a little bit harder.
It's still there, but it's not there the way you're accustomed to. And that might be
totally.
And also just picking up and moving, and then you being like, oh shit, this isn't what I want. Like, look, Atlanta's great, but like, they don't have clubs the way LA and Chicago and New York have. And like,
Laughing
Skull is cool. It's like 80 seats. Punchline's cool. It's connected to a diner, you know?
Right.
It's like,
right.
The room is good, but you're like, shit, I'm in a diner. This is fucking like, it's weird that would be your go-to club, you know?
Right. Well, you get used to that kind of stuff, I imagine, but it's also, you know, everyone always talks about it, or it's been talked about now. But I think it has a lot to do with like your lifestyle and where you are in your career. People forget, they're like, you could live anywhere, right? And just you're like, kind of like.
Well, now more than ever, but still, I mean, with the internet, but like, I mean, still, man, LA, Chicago, you bring up is like, some comics live there. Chicago is such a cool city, but I think a lot of people.
Oh, I love
it.
I think
a lot of people just look at those winters and are like, I'm good.
That's what I did. Yeah. That's why I couldn't do it. I mean, genuinely, I just couldn't do it. I want to go back at some point, or at least be there for a good time chunk of the year, you know, like the summer. But I don't know. I don't know if I want to deal with it now that I've been living, you know,
I got lost
in 75.
I got lost in Chicago once, and it was so cold that I like couldn't look at my phone because of my fingers. And I was like, I'm not going to find the place. This is like my revenant. This is like as bad as my life has been. And I could probably just find it, but like no stores were open. I thought I was going to freeze to death for like, you know, a minute.
I'd always have a lighter on me. I mean, I also, because I smoked pot in high school, but I'd always have a lighter to light my car key on fire to get through my door jams would, the locks would freeze up. So I'd have to light the key so I could wiggle it in the door lock to get it unlocked. Before I had a, you know, we had the whoop whoops on the car keys, you had to physically put the key in, and I'd have to heat it up enough to get through the ice that was frozen inside the lock. It was, dude, I don't miss that stuff. I don't miss like terrifically shit winters.
That's the car thing. The city. Like, it's not even something I understand on so many levels. Like the winters, the keys. Right. Like I'm so inept with cars. I remember Taylor once got mad at me because she's like, you're not going to get out and do the gas for me. And I was like, I guess I could figure it out. Let me try to figure out how to do gas. So like I've done the gas a few times, but I don't really know how to work cars at all.
That's very funny though. You're not going to get out and do the gas for me. It's like, listen, if you guys want to get paid the same amount as us, fill up your own fucking gas.
That's what I should have said.
You fucking laid on the law,
I
Sam.
Said, I believe Jordan Peterson said it best and just started a huge fight.
Listen, you're like Rush Limbaugh says, if you want any respect as a human on this earth, yeah, no. Are you big into that, by the way? Do you do all that chivalrous stuff? Like, will you always open the door and do all that?
Not always, but usually, I mean, I had a habit I usually do, but I'm sure I slip up sometimes. Yeah, I guess define chivalry. Like, she pays for a lot of stuff, you know? Doing well.
Yeah, make them pay. They should be paying.
Yeah.
They should pay.
But I hold doors usually. Here's my thing. I'll hold the door if it makes sense to hold the door. If it's like some log jam, I'm not going to fucking just like be like standing like a fucking British, you know, like right. You're the queen or something, you know?
Right.
I will hold the door though, usually. Yeah, I'm usually.
No, I think it's chivalry within reason,
that's
right?
Perfect.
Like I'll do chivalrous stuff, but it has to kind of fit the scenario. I don't believe in like always opening the car door for her. Sometimes that's just inconvenient.
Yeah, it feels like you're showing off. It doesn't feel sincere. It's kind of like,
no,
it's almost like you're rubbing their face in it or something.
Well, it's also like, it sounds dickish, but it's like, if you're holding the door for a not so nice car, there's something weird about like holding the door for a piece of shit to get. You're like, you can get in. I'll hold the door. If it was a really nice car, I'd open the door. But it's like, yeah. Let's just get in and get this over with. I want to keep it moving. Are you excited that basketball season is going to loop its way around again?
It's so important to my life because I need a distraction. And like, I feel bad for these players. They're like, we'll give you 2 months to recover. But I'm
not even right. Half of those guys, they didn't even stop. They just kept working out because they were like, well, why go home for 7 weeks or whatever?
I'm so pumped, man. And the game's coming up, like all these great games, all these great storylines. I fucking love it. I love the NBA.
Did you watch? Yeah. For people that are listening, Sam has a podcast with Stavros.
Love him.
How do you say
Stavros
his last name?
Hulk is the funniest. He's the best.
Like Hulk is, yeah, he's hilarious. I never know how to say his last name, so I just say Stav. But you guys have a podcast together. How often do you put it out every week?
We do one Patreon a week and one regular a week. You've been on it. It's a lot of fun.
We
don't normally do guests, but when there's a slow news time, we'll do guests. We just had Trey Wingo on, who's one of the coolest people.
Oh,
part
yeah.
of my childhood, man.
It's crazy.
He's such a nice guy, but it's...
Who reached out? How did you guys get a hold of him?
I met him through Instagram. His son likes my comedy, so he was like, let's be friends. And I was like, okay. So we just chat all the time. He's just a great guy. And
awesome.
Yeah, I love doing the pod with Stavros, and it's so... It's got me like looking at news stories. Like now I'm like, I guess Larsa Pippen does fuck around. Like I'm looking at those stories. Like it's so funny that Stavros is obsessed with the gossip and all the dirt. And so we start like, I'm like, I never thought I'd know this much about Tristan Thompson's sex life, but here we are. So it's kind of fun. I mean, Stav gets obsessed with like, he's like, we should do an episode of like the most fuckable owners. And I'm like, all right. So we're just talking about like 28 men and 2 women. That's like what we're ranking.
Who was the most fuckable owner?
Of course, Jeannie Buss pulled it out. Like there's no.
Really?
Well, yeah, because we took into account like.
Does Dolan still own the Knicks?
Oh, Dolan might have gotten second, I think, because I was like, he's got to be in the conversation in case there's like a ticket link scenario.
Right.
Yeah, no, Dolan, he does own the Knicks.
Yeah. He's got to slide up there for you. I was just going to say, you have to be political when you choose who you want to fuck because you also want to put yourself in a position where it might actually happen. Like, if Dolan gave you the call and was like, dude, you know, lifetime tickets, floor seats for the Knicks, you got to fuck me, though. Are you doing it?
I fuck him?
Yeah, you got to fuck him.
To completion?
Yes.
That's going to be tough. I mean, look, I think I'd probably do it because I have some dark memories, maybe some PTSD, but I'm on the Celebrity Row cam every night. Let's fucking dance, right, dude. That's just chilling, watching a game with Tracy Morgan. Yeah, that sounds worth it to me.
What if we sat behind
Tracy Morgan? You know, Anthony DeVito is like one of my closest friends.
Yeah.
DeVito and I, they gave us floor seats to a game once because we used to do a show for MSG, and we're behind Tracy Morgan. And for whatever reason, Michael Beasley just fucking went off. He had like 35 on the Celtics, and Tracy Morgan just keeps turning around to us with like just the most nonsensical like trash talk. He just turn and look at us and go, "Real animals eat meat," and we're like, "Yes." We were just dying.
That dude is a treasure that I'm glad is still making comedy.
He's so funny. He's so fucking funny.
He's one of those guys that should never go away, man. Like, he should still be putting out specials as long as he can.
He
like, because you have to cherish those guys, because one day they just give it up and they're overworked, and there's so much new shit out that you're like, I like to see new comics, but I do like to see the old generation still pumping out.
Oh, dude,
it's just nice.
Years ago, I watched Tracy Morgan at the Cellar. Louis had just gotten off stage. It's probably like 5 years ago. And Tracy Morgan's walking in and they passed each other. And I just witnessed the interaction where Tracy Morgan goes, "I hope you left some pussy on the bone for me." And Louis's like, "I did." He didn't know what else to say. Like, I feel like he was just like, I sure did for you.
What if Louis was doing rooftop shows now? Is Louis bouncing around New York at all? Does anybody see him?
I think he is. Yeah, I ran into him a couple times. I think he's doing shows. Yeah, I saw him at the Stress Factory. He was doing shows, and
but catching him doing a rooftop show would be wild as fuck. You know, Louis on a roof would be fucking. I mean, it's just kind of like that. Now nothing surprises me. Like I said, like me and Burr. And Segura did stand up in the bed of a pickup truck. It's like, there is no rules anymore.
Well, that's...
So I'm sure now it's circling around.
Well, people
around.
Like that, and like I feel like all of us, we do kind of romanticize the struggle of this as well. So, I mean, like, yeah, there is something kind of beautiful about it. Like, if you're like really into stand-up, you want to experience the shittiest moment of our lives in stand-up.
Sure.
And you can kind of like... I mean, that was the roofs became fun for me. I just kind of like, once you lower the bar and you're like, this is what those laughs sound like now. Like a couple of those jokes I had before the pandemic. So I know what the laugh they should have gotten in my head sounded like. And then you, even in my special, I hear the laugh and I'm like, that's a bummer that's the laugh it got, but I want it to be done with it. So,
you didn't do a lot of on your special. You kind of left it as is. It's nice because it's edited, it's cut, but it feels more raw.
It's pretty
it feels
raw.
More.
I mean, we cut in some ugliness because there were moments like we cut in a whole montage of mics not working, which is like part of it. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, I felt weird.
Yeah.
I didn't want to act like this was some glossy production when it just wasn't. So we kept in a moment where I told a story about a crackhead on the street and some woman at dinner overheard me and goes, you're an incel. You're disgusting. And I was like, why? She goes, you're offensive. And I was like, I kept asking why. And she wouldn't tell me. And then we walked down the street and some woman goes, oh, I love your comedy. And I just kind of say, well, that's New York. They love you 1 minute, they hate you the next. So it's kind of like I wanted to keep all the ugliness in because that's what we're living through. There are some real highs and lows right now.
Right. I mean, and honestly, it's just a reflection of what's going on, which I think was great about it. Cause people are putting out, you know, Kevin Hart just put out a special and, you know, there's something about, and this is my stupid opinion, but the glitz and glamour of that, of all these specials that are still coming out, something is being lost because, you know, like they say, like great music and great comedy are a reflection of the time.
Absolutely. That's
and
a great point.
I think with that, with those glossy specials, it's like they're not addressing the reality of the world. I mean, you don't have to like live in it and talk about it all the time, but it doesn't present itself in a way that's truthful. I feel that way about a lot of specials. I mean, like the way that we're getting now, I think we're starting to learn that like the glitz and glamour and the bit and all that shit, the show off special that everyone used to want, I think that's slowly going to go away because it just feels It just feels so fake. It's, cool. it's cool when
the first time when you're like in a theater and you're like, whoa, this is amazing. Yeah. But then you're kind of like, well, this isn't what I'm even used to. This is so weird that this is what I'm doing. But then, so I guess like you see those specials, like, right, Dane Cook did The Garden and you're like, oh my God, this is insane. Right. But then what does he do his next special? It's for like 12 people or something. Because you kind of go back to like what you really, like you kind of have that show off special, but then you're kind of like, no, this is what comedy is to me. Like, is what I love. So I also love the point you make about just reflecting the times. Like, I love old movies. I love film noir. I love like those old detective flicks from the 40s. And those were made because of like World War II and like a reaction to those dark times. And I kind of love that. And everyone's talking about New York going back to being shitty. But like, think about all the movies that gave us, right? We got Midnight Cowboy, Taxi Driver, Mean Streets.
Right.
All these great, great, gritty movies. I'm not saying it creates a safe environment, but it does create some cool art.
Oh, yeah. Well, no one's going to write a movie about New York in 2017 when everything is fine. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's just not, it's, no one's going to write that movie. There's not enough, not to say that you always need bad to make good, but you need perspective to kind of, you know, to learn. When I will say it is interesting, like, things were going so smooth in terms of the economy was good, culture was progressing, we were changing, times were going. And then this kind of threw in this crazy wrench where you're like, oh, things were kind of shitty. You just didn't realize it. You know what I mean? So it'll flip everything on its head. And then when we come out of this on the other side, it'll be better or worse. But the good thing is it'll change. I think we needed some kind of change to happen. There was kind of this monotony that was taking place. I'm not saying this is good for us,
right,
but
like we were going through the motions. I think you're totally right. I think a lot of us were going on autopilot for a while. And
I mean, I was for
I
sure.
Think I was too.
For
I
sure
think
on autopilot.
You get into that groove and you're right. I think sometimes like even with the protests, you're like, oh shit, this happens. Things were going so smoothly that you forget that that people are unhappy and shit happens.
Right.
And like, sometimes you're in this comedy bubble where you're just losing yourself in work that you forget to be a human. And I feel like this pandemic has reminded some of us to like be present and a person.
Totally. Speaking of which, do you want to talk about, Sam was very big. He led a protest of all Lives Matter. And that was yours, right?
That
you were
was
the big
me.
Proponent of
I
all
was
Lives
like,
Matter.
You know what?
Yeah.
No one's talking about this. The other one's getting a lot of press. I went to a couple, I will tell you this, I went to a few Black Lives Matter protests and I did notice there's a white guy climbing a tree at every protest, which I don't know,
know
why, but it's fine. You can tell me
that guy, he worked out a lot in college. he played a little bit of Vision 3 ball, you know, and he kind of misses those days. He's progressive, he's woke, he's aware, but when he goes to those protests, he feels like no one's paying attention to him. So if he climbs a tree and does a couple chit-ups or something, it gets attention, it gets noise. He might make the paper. I know this guy, by the way. I know these guys. Yeah. Yeah. I went to high school with these guys. You know what I mean? Like, they're the first guy to be like at a stoplight. You know, when you like walking drunk through a city with a friend that's like, I'm going to do a pull up on that, that guy. That's the same guy
dude.
That you're like, why are you doing a fucking pull up on the, don't do that. You look like an idiot, but we all kind of stare and watch because you're like,
it is kind of cool.
16, 17. Yeah. It's great. If you can do it, it's so funny about showing off. Oh dude, you would love this. I Am Athlete is a podcast. Have you ever seen I Am Athlete? Do you
know
that?
It.
Oh, dude. Marshall, T.O., Chad Johnson, Fred
Marshall
Taylor.
Falk.
No. Wait, who did I say?
You said Marshall.
Brandon Marshall.
Okay. Marshall Falk was like my favorite player to watch. His prime, it was like, holy shit. Like, he was just the most fun video game type guy, too. He was just the best.
It's almost like the symbol of that Rams helmet was built for him to spear people with. You know?
Oh, dude, he was.
It was like
beautiful.
It's like ergonomically designed for him to murder people as he ran through humans. But the I Am Athlete brought up a great point that I loved. CJ and T.O. were talking about how unfair it was for so long that they took away end zone dances. And I thought this was an interesting point that he goes, I lost millions of dollars. They fined us millions of dollars for doing these dances. And collectively, you know, he goes, where did the money go? Not to any charity. Didn't go to the right place. You know, it went to the, so what a crock of shit that was. Cause they argued it should have gone to Play 60, to their youth program or any of the other sponsorships. Absolutely. And I totally agree with this. CJ said our fines should go to the charity of our choice. I was like, dude, that's a great idea.
NBA does the same shit. They all do this where they're like, it's like disciplinary action, but who are you helping? Also, I find it a little fucked up that these players are getting CTE and long-term brain damage. They can't fucking dance. Like that's...
Yeah, no, well, that's why they can now, because right there was so much clapback in the NFL. They called it the No Fun League because they took away end zone dances, celebrations, even jawing, even people that were jawing too much, they were throwing flags for people talking too much shit. You were like, what has this become? This is an entertainment league.
It's
this is more fun.
Violent league other than like right, MMA, right. right? It's like the most, UFC, right. It's the most violent league. And you can't talk right. shit. Same shit. I was just listening to this podcast, called Whistleblower about Tim Donaghy, you know, who's, you know, the referee who,
the greatest ref of all time.
Who rigged games, but they're talking about him rigging. In the first episode, they say how he, how Rasheed Wallace, he just gave him two quick technicals and she didn't say shit. And then she waits for him after the game, like talking shit to him, gets him suspended like 7 or 8 games, cost him $1.8 million. And it was fucking, so they, I guess Joe Dumars, who was the Pistons GM, called him at the time and said, when they found out about Donaghy, hey, Rasheed, you were right. I don't know if we got the money back, but like,
no, that money's gone. That money is gone. Yeah. That's the thing, is they take that, those fines get lost. And what CJ was saying was, you know, how unfair it is that now they have a celebration camera. He goes, can you imagine? I mean, what a hypocrisy that we could for years. Then you told us no, so you fined us out the face. Then you took it away. He goes, I don't know what the legal term is, but he's like, we should do a player's suit against the NFL to get that money back, and at the very least, it be given to charity, which I thought
was genius. Great idea.
And he was
Goodell
like, and he goes, go in the books.
Goodell is such a shitty owner. I mean, it's like, it's insane. I feel like he's like the dude that makes every wrong step. And like, look, David Stern for the NBA, that guy was mobbed up, no question. But he was like cool. He 100%. Was cool mobbed up, where like he seemed like smart as hell. He knew how to like, you know, grease like all the like, you know, right political moves. But with Goodell, it just feels gross. Yeah, there's something wrong about it.
Well, I feel like there's no true connection to an idea of an organization organically, right? So for me, he does whatever he thinks he's supposed to do. This is another thing that they brought up on the podcast was Belichick got fined, the mask fine on the sidelines. You know, coaches, I think, get fined $100,000 if they're in violation. Yeah.
Aren't they doing rapid tests for everybody too? I don't understand.
Not only are they testing, listen to how crazy this is. In the locker room, on the airplane, and on practice days, they don't have to wear any masks. There is no NFL requirement. So what T.O. was saying was it's all optics. It's optics. And it is. It's so the NFL can show fans like, we care. But it's like, no, you don't give a shit. You don't care at all.
Especially T.O. who gave everything to the game. The guy played with a fucking broken leg. Like, you can't question that dude's heart. I mean, I know he got a lot of bad press for his personality and being all about him at times. But like, he had heart.
But truth be told, he talked about that too. Was like, what did I do wrong besides being a little bit like confident and boisterous? Like he talked about the Dallas Cowboys moment where he stood on the star and spread his arms.
That was hilarious, by the way.
Well, it wasn't premeditated, and he actually talks about it that
would George Teague just fucking drop them?
Dropped him. I mean, smoked him. Well, he said it was because the receiver. One of the receiver coaches said when they were taking the tour, you know, when they do tour of the stadium before and before they run practice, he was looking and if you look up from the star in the stadium, there was there's a hole. The roof is movable. And he said something to the effect of like, you break through the ceiling and show them it's your house.
Wow.
And so subconsciously, when he scored that touchdown, he goes, I just ran to that star and looked up through the roof because of what he said to me before the game. It wasn't, spitting on the star. It wasn't, you know, fuck Dallas. He's like, it was just this this moment that, like, when he said that before the game, it laid in his brain and was like, I'm going to bust through this roof. And it, but no one, those stories are too late to be told because the paper was like, show off, asshole, disrespect. You know, it's like they ruined the truth because they just
throw
literally.
Like Donovan McNabb kind of under the bus, though?
Sure.
That's because I don't care about all the flashy shit. I care when you're like bad to your teammates. That's when I'm like, I was a fan of T.O. for sure. I mean, his talent was like remarkable. I
just think there's so much more going on behind the scenes that we'll never know about. And the good guys are always going to look like the good guys. The bad guys are always going to look way worse. They're never like, you know, Peyton Manning could have been treacherous to people. You'll never find out. Was he? I don't know, but will the league show that? Never
too
in
important.
A million
too
years.
Too important to the league. Absolutely.
Yes. So again, too going back to this, stake. These organizations, the NFL does such a bad job of being original. They just will do whatever they think they're supposed to do. With the taking a knee shit and Kaepernick, it's like all this goes back to the NFL going, what does everybody want us to do? They have no opinion. They have no stance. They coddle. He coddles to everything. And then... that's why people talk shit and they hate the NFL. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I just don't get when people, like, look, whether you're for or against the protests, like, it's a part of life. It's a part of sports. Like, it's always been a part of sports, you know? So,
yeah,
I mean, you could say there's no place for protests in sports. Well, I mean, shit, Jackie Robinson wasn't that long ago. Bill Russell on the Celtics dealing with insane racism wasn't that long ago. So I always say, like, you don't have to tune out for the national anthem if you don't want to watch it. You know, play...
Right. By the way, I've never watched the national anthem. I've never watched it on TV.
And
I've never stuck around.
You can be like for the troops and for a person's right to. I think that's what most people kind of are, for the troops and for a right to protest. So, you know, shit, man.
You're right.
Totally,
you're right.
I don't like when people say shit like, well, they should just do it in private, and I'm just like, well, that's not a protest. That's the protest is meant to disrupt. So
right. So people can pay attention to it. There's a moment that it deserves to. You need to have your voice heard in whatever the way you get your voice heard.
I've talked to people
heard, you know?
Who disagree with it and people who agree with it, and I'm interested in both their point of views. I kind of just am like, you know what, I think it costs, you know, people money. I think it's cost Kaepernick money. Maybe he got a lot of it back with that Nike deal, but even with the NFL, like.
Yeah.
Or the NBA, like, it's, although the NBA player who wants to really, like, cost himself money at this point, like, what if Gordon Hayward were just like, all lives matter, dude? I think they all fucking, like, that's how you really, that's brave in the NBA. But in the NFL, like.
Right. Caruso comes out with a Hitler tattoo, a Nazi tattoo on his back.
American History X just takes it off. Right, except instead of American History X, it's just like LeBron dunking on him every fucking play. The worst scrimmage ever.
Yeah, no, it's just I just, you know, I think that it's become, this is the problem that I have, and we got political for no reason. I don't know why.
Well, we're keeping it light, though, I think.
Yeah. Well, I thought about it the other day. Well, I don't really care. This is how I feel. You know, like, I was watching, there's a commercial for a washer and dryer, Whirlpool or somebody or whatever, and the song that they're playing is Old Dirty Bastard's Hey Dirty, Baby I Got Your Money, and I was sitting watching it with my wife's parents, and we're sitting there watching the commercial, and when it's over, because they change the lyrics to Hey Dirty, Baby I Got Your Laundry,
ooh,
don't you worry. Right. And I thought about it. I thought, this is a room full of white executives who think it's cute, right? But it's like the same people that are upset sometimes when culture goes too far, right? When they're like, Wet Ass Pussy is an offensive song.
Yeah.
But in 30 years, if they could change it to wet ass pants, and it's like, are your pants, you know what I mean? Like, whatever they can do to fit their agenda and their narrative. Because I go, can you imagine if 20 years ago when that song came out, Baby I Got Your Money, if those same people would have liked that song? It's about hookers. It's about being a
totally.
Pimp to hookers. Yeah. And you're like, oh, now it's a whirlpool. Now it's okay, corporate. It's like, America gets mad. And this is what I'm talking about, protests and stuff. America gets mad at Black Lives Matter protests in the sports only because it's so combative towards their, towards what they're okay with, right? But in 20, 30 years, much like music, they're okay with it because it's cute now. You know, to say like, to when your aunt uses the words on fleek or like, you know, that's lit. You know what I mean? Like they're okay with it as long as it's gone through a certain amount of time.
It's like a, it's like a Brita for them filter. To then adopt it's just, it. It's got to go through the proper routine. You're totally right.
Right.
Baby, I Want Your Laundry is so upset. Imagine being like a diehard Wu-Tang fan and you're just like, they'll never get ODB's music and just seeing that commercial and just dying on the inside.
Well, that's what I love about the hypocrisy of America with stuff like that is like, we're only okay with culture it doesn't offend us only if it fits like what we're okay with. Because like Wet Ass Pussy pissed off all these people, but they don't talk about music from 20 years ago that they're mad about because now it's tame. You know what I mean? Like that shit was, it was nothing right. Now. Now it means nothing. Back then, they were so mad at Eminem. You know what I mean? They're so angry at Eminem, and now he's old. Nobody cares anymore.
Sang with Elton John. They were like, "All right, it's safe, everybody. We can all come out." You know?
Right.
Yeah, for sure.
Right, Elton John. They asked him. They were like, "Well, he says fag a lot, and aren't you offended?" And he's like, "We're making up stories, and it's the same thing with what we do on stage. It's like, not all of this is real, and not all of this matters. We're sparking conversation, sparking ideas, making you think about some shit that you might not think about
it's behind people's back.
Who cares?
And it's not. It's like headline grabbing, and it's." You know, it's baiting people rather than like looking at them as a human being like, well, maybe he's like the Eminem I think of is like Monday Night Football, seeing Al Michaels like, oh my God, you're a legend. Like that's hilarious. That's Eminem, like that childlike wonder as well. So, you know, people can be more than one thing. You can be like, he's a homophobe and like, all right, maybe he grew up differently than you. Maybe it's going to take him a longer time to be like, oh, maybe I should say that word less, or maybe he won't come to that conclusion, but maybe like hammering people the way we hammer people and trying to shame them into having the views that you have is not the way to change their mind either. So look at them as a human and don't just try to like, I hate this mob mentality on the internet where you just like this person did this attack. It's so fucking, it's so pointless. Right. You're not changing anyone. You're humiliating someone. It's for you. It's not for them.
Totally. I also think there's a big moment now that's coming around, and I think it's on its way, that we're going to start having conversations with people that we disagree with instead of just burning them to the ground. We're holding people accountable in a different way. I think that'll be the new thing, will be, well, tell us why you think that way. I think if more people are given platforms to explain why they said something or did something, we'd be better off than just trying to kill someone for saying something that we don't agree
with. Twitter needs
like,
more characters before we can attack.
No shit. 140
characters. That's why people are like this person said this, and then you fucking just slam them. It's like it's also with our politics now. It's like it's set up to dunk on the other person. You're not going to get retweets if you're just like, well, this person thinks this and I think this, and we'll work together. Like, what's going to get more retweets? Right. Biden saying, this is time for us to come together, or Trump writing rigged, you know?
Right.
which one's going to get more eyeballs?
Which you and I both retweeted often. A lot of Trump rigged. I love the rig. I'm going to retweet it. That's what I said that on stage. I said, everybody loves Biden and you hate Trump. And I understand it. All these people are so angry at Trump. But I will say, all of my friends, myself included, I follow Trump on Twitter. Am I going to follow Biden? No chance. There's no way he's going to say anything funny enough for me to follow. So whether we like it or not, we were obsessed with Trump. Everybody hated him that they said that. All these people that said they hated him, they still follow the dude and constantly were invested in what he was doing and saying. It's fascinating to think about from a social experiment. Like, I would never follow Biden. I would never follow. It just wouldn't interest me. Do you know what I mean? You follow what you hate.
You follow the car crash is what you follow.
Of course, it makes total sense.
I mean, it's funny like how like what we react to, because everything going viral now, you think you know, you don't know what's going to happen. I remember at one of those debates in like 2016 when it was Trump and He said something about Carly Fiorina. Remember her? He's like something about how she's. Look at her. Like something about her being ugly. And and she goes,
great.
I think the American people heard him loud and clear. And everyone responded. I was like, wow, she got him. And then the next day, he's just like,
right.
He's just like fine again. Like it only the zing only works if it's mean. It doesn't work if it's like
right.
The dignified thing in the moment. You're like, wow. But the thing that gets the stain power is like the insult line.
Right. What is it? Is it better to be, is it better? Somebody said this to me yesterday. I don't know if it's from Bronx Tale. He said, is it better to be loved or hated? And it says, hated because they remember you longer or it lasts longer. What's that quote? Do you know what I'm talking about?
The one I remember for Bronx Tale. Oh, God. There's nothing worse in the world than a man's wasted potential. That's the whole thing.
That's exactly right.
That and no interracial dating. That's what I remember from Bronx Tale.
Well, yeah. What are they doing in our neighborhood? That's another one. And that's something that, you know, I know you support heavily. I'm just trying to throw you under the bus with the All Lives Matter protest. And honestly, people do need to go to Sam's website. You can donate to All Lives Matter on Sam's website.
All Lives Matter. What is a Jew doing here? And I said, why don't you guys back off? No, you know.
Now you and honestly, I didn't know you were Jewish, and knowing that, I'm not going to be able to put this podcast out. I'm
damn
sorry
it.
About that.
We
man.
Had a good talk though.
I don't want to associate with you guys. No, what? Who said? Somebody said the other day. They said something about how many Jewish comics you know versus how many non-Jewish comics you know, and I said, I couldn't tell you because a lot of my friends that are Jewish. They try to hide it. I mean, some better than others. And the ones that don't hide it as well need to take take a lesson because I didn't know that you were Jewish before this, Sam. And now that I do, I'm a little
about
upset.
About 10 years ago, I featured for Marc Maron in Rooster Teeth Feathers, not bragging, but we were working Rooster Teeth Feathers in Sunnyvale, and it was a great weekend. We had a lot of fun, but I remember he pulled me aside. You know when you're like a younger comic and, you know, a guy you respect kind of says something kind of you, it's like, ugh. He said, you're a real hide the Jew. That's what he said to me. And I was like, well, what does
really?
That mean? And he goes, you don't talk about it enough on stage. He was like annoyed. And then I saw him years later at JFL and he said, we started chatting and he said, how was your set? I said, you know, I actually opened with a Jew joke because you called me a hide the Jew tonight. And he said, I got to you. I was like, Jesus.
You're a real hide
the
Jew.
Funny term.
Well, I think, I mean, he does. He does
that was a different
lead
insult
a lot.
In World War II Germany. You're a real hide the Jew. You just said that to nice families that hid Jews.
Well, also, speaking of which, you are the only Jewish male comic I know with a World War II joke. So,
eat your heart out, Eliza. That's
yeah. You're the only one, dude. Yeah. You're the other one. But genuinely, I mean this. I do like you, even though you're Jewish. You're a great dude. You're a great dude. You're a great comic.
You,
and people do need to watch. Go watch Up on the Roof on Sam's YouTube channel. Amongst a million other clips that you post, you're really great at that, man. You are good at like putting new content
I'm
up.
I'm always nervous
so
to post shit that isn't a joke.
Yeah, but who cares? Like, that's how you know what I've learned is like, I'm no longer posting for my friends anymore. I'm posting for my fans. So like, whatever I think is going to be fun with my fans, I don't give a fuck if any of my comic friends like it anymore.
Exactly.
I'm too grown for that shit. I just see at some point you're like, fuck you, dude. This is for me and the people that like my comedy or what I do and all the nuances of it, whatever it is that you need to
it's
put
like
out
performing
there.
For friends. At a certain point, you got to perform for you and the people that come out. It's, you know, some of those comics early on, remember those comics early on that just fucking murder at open mics, but they could not. They
could do
well on real shows. And at mics, they were like, this is the funniest person I've ever seen. And then you see them in front of a real audience and you're like, you can't do all sodomy jokes. You can't like, these are normal people.
Yeah.
You got to shift a little. You got to shift gears.
I still know some of those guys, I think that's a detriment, is being a comics comic. It's a great thing, but comics aren't going to pay your rent or your mortgage. So at some point you have to go, I want to preserve my comedic integrity, but I want to connect with fans. Like too much inside baseball never is going to work. with audiences. So I think you've done a great job, honestly, doing that. You've grown so much as a comic, genuinely, from over the years, which is great to fucking see. And this special is very, very funny.
Thanks
and it's good. You touch on some personal shit, which I think was, I think that's huge. Not everyone needs to
do
that.
I don't do it enough. I definitely hide certain things probably just out of like embarrassment.
You hide the Jew. Yeah. No, but not everyone needs to divulge their deepest, darkest. Not everyone is going to
be conscious of it, like sounding like a therapy session as opposed to a comedy show where I'm like, all right, is this funny enough? I don't want to just share shit that isn't funny. Like, we've all done that where I'm just like, did I just tell them something humiliating that had no joke? Like, that's not what a show is.
Right.
So I'm always
right.
I'm very conscious of that when you do that like one man show type of thing, and there isn't just a funny ending to it. It needs something. It's still comedy. It's not just Cher.
Sure. Yeah, but it still needs the breadth of comedy in there. And like Dave Chappelle has become so prolific and he's trying to get so many messages across that a lot of times I don't think he gives a fuck about being doing comedy or being a comedian. He inherently is, but he's at a stage now where he's always trying to drive a message.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like it's very embedded in what he says, and I think that's something that comes with time too. It depends on what stage you are in your life and your comedy and all that stuff. Well, I think you hit it on the head with doing this special now at this time. I think it's smart. I hope people go watch
it. Thank you so much for having me, man. And
yeah, dude, it's great, dude. Honestly, I really appreciate it, and it's good to know that you also it's good to know that you have a father that. That ran away from you.
I had a great dad. I always try say, I don't want to get like, I hate when you get the, aw. And I'm like, no, I had a great dad raise me. So my mom got married when I was like 7 or so. And he was like, basically, you know, he's my dad. I love him. He's the best dad. But people, I want the jokes to hit. I don't want people to go, aw. But it's funny to me. I mean, my fucking biological dad lives 9 blocks to me. And to me, that's fucking hilarious. I've had to like dodge him before. It's so, that's New York where I'm just like, shit, do I have to do a stop and chat with my fucking dad? You know,
does he still lives that close to you?
He does.
Holy shit.
I kept
shit,
in a burn.
Really?
I made Phil, I was at dinner. I know, you know, Phil Hanley Hanley and I, one of my best friends, were at dinner and I said, you know, my biological dad lives in artist housing and I, you know, he's not even an artist. And Phil goes, well, he's an escape artist. And everyone laughs so,
everyone laughed so hard
that I made him retell the joke with the cameras rolling. Cause I was like, it's so funny to me. And, you know,
he is it look, dude, that kind of truthful stuff to me will always be worth it. Like, that's always worth that, giving that out, doing more, exposing yourself a little bit in that regard to your comfort level, I think is great. If you're able to talk about it and you want to, it's funny, man, because that shit's funny. And then, you know, who knows, in 5 years we'll see you, you'll have a CBS show of dodging my dad in New York. It'll be a Sam Morrell is dodging his dad. Your dad will be Richard Kind or something like that. And
I just
wrote
Elliot
a really great
Gould.
Show for you.
I want the old school Jew, and he was a cool. He was like the coolest right. Jew in the, you know.
Yeah. He was, man. All right. Well, we'll set it up. I'll call some executives over there. I'll call up Les Moonves. In the meantime, check out Sam's special. He's the best.
Thank you so much for having me again. And
we end the show the same way. One word or one phrase. I'm going to walk off camera and then you look into camera and you end the episode saying one word or one phrase when you're ready.
Hope this ends soon.
In here, we pour whiskey, 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 whiskey.
You were that creature in the ginger beard.
Sturdy ginger.
Like vampires, the ginger gene is a curse.
Gingers are beautiful.
You owe me $5 for the whiskey. $75 for the horse.
Gingers, oh hell no.
This whiskey is excellent.
Ginger. I like gingers.